Last week, we spoke about the aptness of anger, that perhaps even at times when our anger would be counterproductive, we might even set our cause back by expressing our anger. Nonetheless, that anger might have moral weight because of its aptness, the appreciation in a visceral, non-utilitarian way that something is wrong in the world. Perhaps anger is powerful and good simply for recognizing that kind of injustice. This is the anger that, in the language of one likely errant scribe of the Talmud, gives nachas ruach leyotzro, pleasure to your creator. And I want to be clear, I am not backing away from any of those things that we said in the last 2 weeks tonight. And I'm actually going to return to this notion of righteous anger at the end of this evening. But at the same time, I've also continually returned to, in the first two lectures, the idea that even if and even when anger can be righteous, it takes a toll, right? There is value in being very cautious about when and how we use our anger. As I said in week one, the reason why I've spent so much time learning Torah about anger is because of an inherent sense that my own anger is, in fact, a problem. And so I think it would be a missed opportunity if in a lecture series on anger, where we spent time thinking about, is our anger righteous, we didn't also think seriously about how to manage our anger, how to make our anger rarer, less all-encompassing, and such that it might be more effective when it is actually appropriate for it to come out. The last 2 weeks have been committed to understanding when and how anger can be good, but we shouldn't delude ourselves into thinking that most of our anger falls into that category. So, when we think about our own anger, what is our goal? The vast majority of rabbinic texts make it seem as if the goal should be to utterly eliminate our anger. And we've seen lots of texts like this. Think about the text that said that anyone who gets angry, they lose their sagacity if they are a sage, they lose their prophecy if they are a prophet. Anyone who gets angry, all manners of hell rule over them. We saw the Rambam deviating from his normal policy of always advocating for the golden mean and saying anger is the one thing, one of two things, I'll come back to that later tonight also, one of two things where we should go to the total extreme and be completely devoid of anger. So you would think that it is a valid desideratum to actually get rid of our anger entirely. And I want to see one more source like this with you tonight. Source number one on the source sheets, Talmud Bavli Ta'anit 20b. Mai hava uvde de Rav Ada bar Ava. What was this, after telling us that Rav Ada bar Ava was a very special person, what was it that he did that was so special? Ki had itmar, like that which was stated, Shalu Talmidav la Rav Ada bar Ava, Rav Ada bar Ava's students asked him, Bema harachta yamim, what did you do to merit such long life? Amar lahem, meyamai lo ikpati besoch beisi, in all of my days I never got angry in my home, velo tsa'ati bifnei misha gadol mimeni, and I never walked in front of someone who was of higher status than me, and so on and so forth. It goes on to another number of other things, some of which we may come back to later tonight. Now, what I love about this text, and what I find so terrifying about it, is the specification that he never got angry besoch beiso, within his own home. Because he surely doesn't mean that he never got angry at home, but out in the street he would rage like a madman, right? What he means is, even in his own home, he never lost his temper. The home, which is a place where I know I'm not alone, I rarely show my rage outside of the house, but at home with my immediate family, that's where you see that I have an anger problem. And even in Rav Ada bar Ava's own home, he never gave in to his rage. This is a text that totally resonates with my own experience, and as I said before, is terrifying. The idea that our goal should be to completely eliminate any anger within ourselves, such that even when we're with those people closest to us, those people with whom we have no layers of hiding behind, even with those folks, we never show any kind of anger. Luckily, there is another kind of model hinted at in our sages. Source number two, a Mishnah from Pirkei Avos, tells us that there are actually four kinds of people with regard to anger. There is someone who is noach lichos v'noach lirtzos, easily angered and easily appeased. Such a person is yatza scharo behefsedo. Such a person, the good goes out with the bad. It's very nice that you're easily appeased, but you're also easily angered, so you kind of end up at zero. Kasha lichos v'kasha lirtzos, someone who is difficult to anger. They don't get angry easily, but they are also, when they do get angry, difficult to appease. Yasef Seido Bischaro, they also end up at zero because the good trait of being difficult to anger is balanced out by the trait that they are difficult to appease. Kasha lichos venoach lirtzos chasid, someone who is slow to anger and easily appeased, that person is a truly pious person, a chasid. Noach lichos vekasha lirtzos rasha, if you are easily angered and hard to appease, well, that is a truly wicked trait. Now, many commentators have pointed out about this Mishnah that it seems to be at odds with so many of the texts that we've seen these last 3 weeks. These texts that make it seem as if anyone who gets angry, kol hakoes, anyone who gets angry at all, it is as if Gehinnom, hell, reigns over you. But this text does not tell us that the chassid is someone who is never angry, but rather someone who is kash elichos, someone who is slow to anger, implying that they sometimes do get angry. And there are a number of different resolutions in various commentators on this text to try to explain why here it's a trait of piety to rarely get angry. Not never to get angry, but rarely to get angry. And I want to look with you at source number 3 here, the Tosfos Yom Tov, one major commentator on the Mishnah, who tells us why this text actually allows for some amount of anger. He writes, Aval shelo lichos klal, lo nimtza b'shum deya. Right? The text says you should be slow to anger because actually getting angry is not found in any personality trait. There is no person who never gets angry. Ki mi lanu gadol be'anava mim Moshe Rabbeinu alav hashalom. Who among us is greater when it comes to humility than Moshe? Right? Moses is, according to the Torah, the most humble person who ever lives. And if the most humble person who ever lives gets angry, v'ne'am arbo, v'yiktsov Moshe al pikudei achayel, Moshe got angry with the people. If the most humble person who ever lived gets angry, well, then all of us get angry. And so it's not actually possible. Maybe it's a desideratum, but it's not actually realistic to strive for never getting angry. And instead, our goal should be to be kashet lichos, to be slow to anger. So my goal tonight, then, is to think together with you about how we can minimize our anger without obliterating it. Both because sometimes, as we've said for the last 2 weeks, our anger is necessary, it is good, but also because it is setting ourselves up for disappointment to do otherwise. If our goal is to completely rid ourselves of anger, we will always feel like failures. If Moshe Rabbeinu lost his temper, then so will I, and so will you. But what are the techniques that we can use, that we can turn to try to make our anger rare and appropriate? Now, this kind of question of how do we actually do that inner work or that practical work of getting to a place of being a less angry person is not the sort of question that classical rabbinic texts, texts from the 2nd through 7th century CE, tend to get into. There are exceptions, but for the most part, that's not the kind of question that the classical rabbis get into. And so tonight we're going to shift gears, not only with regard to the kind of question we're asking, but also with regard to the genre and time period of text that we're looking at. Instead of looking at classical rabbinic texts and medieval texts like the Rambam, we're going to shift gears and look at primarily Hasidic texts from the last 3 centuries, and specifically Hasidic texts from the courts of Chabad Lubavitch, which I imagine is the Hasidic group most people are most familiar with, as well as the court of Piazetzna. Well, I'll come back to these as we approach them. And I want to start with a couple approaches to thinking about anger management in these Jewish sources that really I would describe as focusing on techniques, right? What are the, how do I transform myself? How do I become the kind of person who rarely, if ever, gets angry? But how do I actually just, in practice, minimize my response to the stimulus that generates my anger? So let's start with path number 1. This is source number 4. This is, it says Igrot HaKodesh. It should say Igrot Kodesh. That's just a typo on my part. Igrot Kodesh are the letters of the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, the 7th Rebbe who passed away in 1994. There are thousands of these letters. And this first letter we're going to look at, source number 4, gives us one technique for trying to deal with our anger. He writes, regarding that which you wrote, regarding the trait of anger and arrogance. I'm going to come back to this later tonight, but I want to flag here, this is actually the second text tonight already that we've seen that lumps together anger and arrogance, and it is not the first night that we've seen that. So that's that pairing I want to flag now. We'll come back to it later. So you wrote to me about anger and arrogance. Kumo b'chol ha'inyanim, like with all things, derech ha'tikun b'zeh hu tzad achar tzad. The way to improve is not to try to go from being a raging, angry person to being the most placid, at peace person on earth, but rather to work step by step. So what's the first step? Haschala lis'akev shelo lahabia kas o hagava b'dibur. The start, he says, the first step to dealing with our anger is not to let it out. Of course, there will be events, there will be moments, there will be interactions that set you off, that instill in you a feeling of rage. And that's all well and good, at least for now. You may not have the power to stop that feeling, at least for now. But what you can control is whether you give that intangible emotion a physical expression in the form of your speech. Now, this is actually a similar approach to an idea that we saw come up in both of the first 2 weeks, namely the question of whether we can actually separate the feeling of anger from its expression. Our main text last week, the Talmudic Sugya from Tractate Shabbos, was about tearing in your rage. We were told that one who tears in their rage should be like an idolater to you. By implication, it is not necessarily the case that someone who feels rage is all that bad. And so that sugya seemed to have this idea that you could actually separate the feeling of the emotion from the expression of it. And we saw the Rambam kind of work in the opposite direction. He actually said, yeah, anger is so terrible, what you should actually do is express false anger, right? But either way, we have this idea that you can sort of separate these two aspects of anger, its feeling and its expression. And this technique of the Lubavitcher Rebbe seems to be that same model, right? At least at first, we're not trying to be the kinds of people who are, you know, I'm sure you all know people who they just seem never to get angry, right? Like, everything can be going crazy, their kids can be screaming at them, the world is on fire, and they're just completely calm and cool. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea, because I'm not such a person. But even if it is true, our goal is not, at least at first, to become that kind of person, but rather not to express it, right? To go back to my old example, I step on that Lego that my child left in the middle of the living room floor, I feel burning rage, but I don't express it. I keep it inside. That's one approach. Now, as I said last week, I'm not so sure how I feel about that assumption that you can actually separate the feeling from the expression. There's surely debate about this, but many experimental psychologists doubt that a core emotion, such as anger, can be felt without being expressed. You might be able to bottle it up temporarily, but it will inevitably manifest itself somehow at some point. Speaking more personally, though I definitely feel in my own life that I have more control over my speech than over my emotions, it is still very hard to catch myself in that moment between feeling the anger and that expression of it, yelling at someone or something, screaming. Again, I don't want to deny all responsibility, but I personally feel, and I suspect that if you're in a lecture series on anger, maybe you also feel this way, that it's sometimes very hard to actually stop yourself before that moment. So this technique, I totally get, I totally appreciate, and I will say for me, does not really feel like it might be the most generative way to actually deal with my own anger. So let's take a look at another option. Path number two, and here I'm going to ask you to skip ahead in the source sheets. I rearranged the sources after we'd printed them. To source number 8, this is also from the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, from Menachem Mendel Schneerson, from the same collection, but a different letter. This is a letter which the Lubavitcher Rebbe was written to by a young woman from France who was dealing with her anger issues. She had tried so many things, she couldn't figure out how to solve her anger problems. And so responding to her, the Lubavitcher Rebbe writes, "Ken tikayem ha-mitzvah, al pi ha-shulchan aruch, shemi shepogmim bichvodo, afilu bitoch kas, tzarich levakesh mimenu mechila gemura." So one thing you should do, he says to this young questioner, you should fulfill the halacha, the Jewish law that is found in the Shulchan Aruch, that if you offend someone, if you do something to hurt someone, even though it was from anger, right? Even though you weren't in your right head, right? You're not fully, there's a sense here that you're not fully accountable because the anger sort of took away your full free will in some sense. Nonetheless, you are obligated, just as if I offended you without being angry, even when I was angry, I am obligated to request a full and complete apology. I have to offer you a complete and full apology. I have to beg for your forgiveness. V'cheivan shebakashas mechila kashahu al adam. And since asking for forgiveness is a hard thing to do, and this, I will say, resonates so deeply with me. There are times when I get angry with one of my children, and 5 minutes later, I know that I'm in the wrong and they weren't, right? I know that my anger was completely disproportionate to what happened, and I know that I should apologize. But I rationally, it makes all the sense in the world, but in my head, in my heart, I don't want to apologize. I'm embarrassed. There's something about it. I don't want to do it. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe knows that is hard for a person to do, to go and request forgiveness from that person. And even though it's very hard, you conquer that sense and you go and request forgiveness from that person.
Right?
If you do that, if every time you yell at someone, you offend them in your anger, if every time you do that, you go and offer them a real and honest apology and ask for real forgiveness, then every time you start to get angry, you'll start to have in your head that sense, oh my gosh, if I yell at this person, I'm going to have to do that awful thing of negating myself, of belittling myself to beg them for forgiveness. V'gamze yazor lachlish midas ha'yizragzuz. Right? And that will actually help you to minimize that sense of anger within you. This is, I think, what psychologists call aversion therapy, right? If every time you do some act that you don't want to do, you have a negative consequence, well, then eventually you learn, at least the mice learn, not to do that thing again. If every time I scream at someone in my rage, I make sure that I offer the most sincere and heartfelt apology, because apologizing is so hard to do, I will eventually become the kind of person who does not get angry anymore. So this, too, is a technique, right? It's not trying to, like, change the kind of person you are on the inside. It's trying to sort of train you, as it were, to not express your rage. I will say this I find more compelling than the model of simply just not expressing it, your anger. Whatever, I won't say more about it than that for the time being. Finally, I want to take one more model of sort of behavioral technique, a way of actually not trying to change who you are on the inside, but trying to change how you sort of express that anger. And now we can turn back to source number 5. And here we're turning from Lubavitcher Chassidus to Pia Zetzner Chassidus. The Pia Zetzner Rebbe was an amazing Rebbe. He's most famous for being the author of the Eish Kodesh. He was a Rebbe who was in the Warsaw Ghetto and managed to give drushes, to give sermons on Shabbos during his time in the Warsaw Ghetto. And miraculously, those sermons were preserved in a can that was sort of buried somewhere, and they were found after the Holocaust and published as the Eish Kodesh. So that's what the Pia Zetzner Rebbe is most famous for, Reb Kalonymus Kalman Shapira. But he's actually the author of a number of incredible works. He was very interested in creating religious community and had these works that sort of instruct us in how to be the kinds of people who can be in a sort of functional community. And the two texts we're going to see from him tonight come from his work, Hachsharas Ha'avreichim, which is sort of handbook to students. How do you become a good Torah learner and Torah student? So, source number 5. Gam be'inyinei ha'olam, yeda inish benafshe, shekasher yeiralo ish bedavar. So it is known to everyone that when someone does you wrong, when someone has offended you in some way, az im yatrid techav be'inyin acher, if you are immediately distracted by something else, velo yelo panai lachshov mehara asher asalo ze, and you're distracted and you don't have time to think about the bad thing that that person did to you. So if, I'm going to pick on Lester since he's sitting closest to me, if Lester does something that offends me, but he does it just as I'm about to start teaching, right? So he offends me, this didn't happen, so just an example. All right, and then I get him to start teaching, and I don't have time to focus on that offense that Lester offered me. If that's the case, lo yisragesh kaso, then your anger will not get activated. Velo tiskale bekirbo midas hagvura shebo, and that trait of sort of strict judgment of gvura will not be revealed within you. Verakim yateret machshavto metza lemidas hagvura. Only if you sort of allow your thought to provide a basis for that trait of strictness of gvura to rise up. And you have time to think about the person, right? The more that festers, I can't believe Lester did that to me, right? And I'm thinking about it now for 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. the longer it festers, v'yifshat v'yirchav es machshav tozo, and that thought sort of spreads out and expands, az yisregesh. Right? Then that sense of anger gets activated. And so here, the advice to deal with your anger, again, it's not any kind of inner work, it's not any kind of actually changing the kind of person you are to be a less angry person, but it's rather distraction, right? Something angers you, go to Facebook. Maybe not Facebook, because that's probably just going to anger you more. But go to something that will be a functional distraction, right? Listen to, if you're a Beethoven fan, Beethoven. Go to a baseball game. Whatever it may be, have some kind of distraction to take you out of that space of feeling angry. So all three of those are what I would call techniques, right? They're basically behavioral therapy approaches to trying to have our anger not really come out as much, but they're not really about trying to sort of change our orientation, change the way we think about ourselves, about the world, such that we can get to a point where anger is actually not something that we're constantly working with, but actually something that is, you know, again, we're not trying to eliminate anger, but to make it rare such that when it does come out, it's for extremely important and appropriate reasons. So let's turn to source number 6. And the next two sources I would describe as really trying to deal with anger from what I would call a theological place. So source number 6 comes from an author we saw last week already, Rebbetzin Feigit Twersky. Rebbetzin Twersky is a very important figure in sort of the like outreach side of the Haredi world. She's a Rebbetzin in Milwaukee, part of the Twersky Hasidic dynasty. And she writes, "All of our behaviors and expressions of emotions are preceded by thought," right? I'm going to pause here and say, it's kind of opposite what I said earlier tonight, right? Earlier tonight I was saying, there's a way in which your emotions are primordial, right? There's a trigger, and you just respond, and it's instantaneous. And she rejects that idea. She says, no, Michael, that is not the case. All of our behaviors and expressions of emotions are preceded by thought. It might be brief, but there is a moment, there is a space between the trigger and the response. There is no objective reality at play. Witness the fact that one day, a given situation undoes us, and the very same set of circumstances doesn't faze us at another time. We are the interpreters, we are the thinkers. Right? In other words, sometimes something will set you off, and another day that same thing will happen and it won't set you off. And what that reflects, she argues, is that there's something about the way you're interpreting reality that makes you angry or not angry in the moment. There's nothing objective about what Lester said to me that makes me angry. It's my interpretation of that that makes me angry. Awareness of this fact should allow us to step back when we have one of the negative thoughts attacking that sparks anger and ask ourselves if this is the bus we want to take. We have the wherewithal, if we so choose, to drop the contaminating thought and move on, thereby making room for the clear thinking of our innate wisdom, the better part of ourselves. A second component of this approach is that generally speaking, when we feel affronted or take offense, it is about me. I feel targeted, hence my ego is bruised, and the anger is a defense of my ego. In reality, the affront that seems to be personal is rarely about us. The inappropriate behavior of the other which triggers our hurt and subsequent anger generally comes from a place of insecurity in the person who is provoking us. We need to say to ourselves over and over again, this is not about me. This is about the insecure place where the combative individual finds himself. Consequently, instead of bringing anger to the scene, we will be able to generate compassion. So Rebbetzin Twersky begins by saying, we actually have the ability to control how we will interpret the world. When something happens, I feel spited. I wasn't invited to some party, or I wasn't, someone grabbed the last slice of pizza without, someone who already had two slices of pizza grabbed the last slice of pizza before I got my first slice of pizza. Sophie's laughing because she knows I'm always the one who grabs the last slice of pizza, right? But I can interpret that. I can get angry because they took away that slice of pizza that I didn't get a chance to eat. Or I can say, you know what? This is not about me, right? I have the ability to frame it as, that's just bad luck. It's just bad circumstances. This is an incredibly powerful way, and I mean that in both senses, right? Powerful that it, you know, it has a lot of power, but also requires a lot of power, right? I wish she gave us like more direction as to how to get to that place. How do I go from feeling like someone's action is directed against me to actually being able to say, it's not about me? But More to the point, what I'm most intrigued about in Reb Zentursky's approach here is that it brings up something that I alluded to already tonight, which is the innate tie between anger and arrogance or self-centeredness, right? We saw, the very first week, we saw the Rambam say that anger is one of two traits that I should never put in the middle. I should always go to the opposite extreme to have none of it. And we sort of ignored the fact, or I led you to ignore the fact, that arrogance was the other one. And I now want to suggest that that's not coincidental, right? There is, and I think Reb Zentursky is suggesting that. Anger and arrogance go together. There's a way in which my anger, at least the extent that it is personal, that is about an affront directed at me, well, that reflects a sense that it's about me. There's a meditative practice some people have to recite over and over again, not me, not mine, right? When something comes up that is, there's something in the world that's sort of troubling, and there's nothing you can do about it, and it might make you angry, it might make you distressed, to sort of recognize, this actually isn't for me to deal with right now. This is not me, not mine. And Reb Zentursky gets at that, right? This says, and we saw it again, Rav Adhbar Ava, who never got angry in his home, he also had a sense of humility. He never walked in front of someone who was greater than him. We saw in source number 4, arrogance and anger partners. So we see this again and again. And I do think that though Reb Zentursky in this piece does not give us clear direction as to how to get to the place where we can actually view the world in a way where we don't feel that anger, I do think there's a sense in which what she's really directing us towards implicitly and almost explicitly is recognizing to the extent that we can make the world not about us, right? Recognize our role in it, but not have everything be about me. When your friend is upset, right? Do you get angry because they're sort of bringing you down? Or do you recognize, no, like there's something going on for them and I have to be here for them in this moment, right? Making it not about you is actually a core piece of getting to a place where you can actually view the world without, in a way that doesn't generate that kind of anger. I call this a theological approach, but I think I really did because in some ways I think Reb Zentursky's approach is very similar to what we'll see in source number 7. This is from the Tanya, the foundational text of Chabad Chassidus, written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi. So earlier we saw text from the 7th and final Rebbe, and now we are going to see a text from the first Rebbe. And he writes like this, V'hu behikdim ma'amar zal, kol ha'koes kilu oved akum v'chulei. Right, we have to begin with this rabbinic statement, which we've seen alluded to already in the first 2 weeks, that anyone who gets angry, it is as if they have worshipped idolatry. So we talked about this last week, right? What's the connection between idolatry and anger? Someone who's saying, this feels exaggerated to me to say that anger is like idolatry. And the Alter Rebbe is going to get into this right now. Hatam muvan liyodei bina. People who really think deeply will understand why anyone who gives in to their anger, it is as if they are engaging in idolatry. Lefisha be'es ka'aso nistalka mimenu ha'emuna. When you are angry, you have lost emuna, you lost faith. Ki ilu haya ma'amin she'me'es Hashem ha'isazos, lo haya be'kas klal. If you believed, as according to the Alter Rebbe you're supposed to believe, that everything comes from God, that when Lester stepped on my toe, well, that's because that's what God wanted, well, then I wouldn't get angry. That's what God wanted. Ach, zeuk she'yesh bi'ado limchos b'katzvo b'kaso al chaveiro. And now he goes on, the requirement to get angry with regard to sin, right, because sometimes you do have to get angry. That's only when one is able to stop it with their rage and anger toward another. So if someone is doing something wrong, then I do have to get angry. But that's only when my anger will actually be able to stop the problematic action, right? If I'm going to keep picking on you, Lester, I apologize. If Lester is doing something wicked, and I'm going to scream at him, and he's like, oh my gosh, Michael is right, I need to stop doing that awful thing, then I should get angry with him. But if I know that Lester is in a place where he's not going to hear my anger, he's going to keep doing that thing, then even in that scenario, I don't get angry with him. Aval k'she'en b'yado limchos kagon oved gilulim ha'medaber u'mebalbelo b'tfilaso im ken mazos asa Hashem lo. Now this example is going to sound offensive. It actually isn't, even though it could easily be. He says, for example, there is a Gentile near you, right? And this is not a case, I will say the Alter Rebbe does have moments when he does say offensive things about Gentiles, but this is actually not one of them, right? He's talking about you are davening, you're praying. And there's a Gentile nearby who, simply by the virtue of the fact they're not Jewish, so they're not davening mincha right now, they're not saying the afternoon prayer, and they're schmoozing, right? And they're talking, and it's getting you upset. Imken mazos asa Hashem lo. Right? what's the issue here? Hashem put you and this other person in this place together. You're trying to say the afternoon prayer. This other person is schmoozing it up and distracting you. Well, why are you both there in that moment? Because God put you there. That's there to give you a challenge, right? It is harder to daven with intent, with kavana, when someone is schmoozing it up right behind you. And you should be thankful that they're there, because that actually gives you a chance to actually improve your powers of concentration, to improve your kavana. That's what God wants. God put that person there. Right, so much so that you won't even hear the person talking behind you. However, for this level of concentration, one needs a great amount of concentration. The idea here, which is, again, the fact that he's talking about a Gentile specifically, I think is both that this person doesn't understand what's going on in terms of your prayer life because they don't have the same prayer regime. And if you yell at them, I think he assumes, which actually might not be true in 21st century North America, but he assumes if I'm trying to daven and someone in my synagogue is schmoozing it up and they say, could you please be quiet? They'll get quiet, where someone from outside of my culture won't listen to me, right? But the idea is that if I can't do anything about it, then my job is to recognize that this is what God wants. God wants me to be living in this moment. So why should I be angry? This is actually what God wants for this moment. So let's turn now to one more approach. Going back to the Piazetzner Rebbe, source number 9 from that same work, from Achsharas HaAvreichem, this guidebook to students. And whatever, you know how the structure of lectures work. This is the last source. It's the one that I love the most, which is not to say that it is without its flaws. So he writes, Kikmo sheyesh achar achilaso, sha'ar orpo miskashe velibo misaben. Right, just like sometimes after you eat something, right, you're like logi and whatever else, and that's when you might sort of be like at your most cantankerous, right, because you're sort of feeling heavy. Or maybe there's a certain kind of food that puts you in a cantankerous mood. V'musar lo yishma, v'chol rucho misnaseh, u'batzmo lo yeda ki achilaso garma lo lezeh. And you don't hear when people tell you, you know, you're acting funny, you're acting not your best self. You don't listen to them, and you become very sort of pompous and arrogant, and you don't realize that it's because you ate something that put you in this sort of wrong mood. Ken yesh gam lifamim shemis atsev o misragez al kol davar v'lo yada lama. Sometimes something puts you in this cantankerous mood, you're angry, you're feeling rage, and you don't even know why. V'hum eze davar gufani im davar kesev o kavod shenis kalbo. It's because of some physical matter, whether it's something monetary or an honor-related issue, someone offended your honor, and you get tripped up in it. Devar tekala nishkach mimenu. The thing that trips you up, you forgot about. Aval alav pa'al lahatzivo largizo. But it's still working on you to make you angry. That is to say, Lester stepped on my toe. I got angry. I'm not angry because Lester stepped on my toe. My toe can take it. And he didn't mean it. And it was totally incidental and didn't hurt that much. But actually, I got into a fight with a parent or a spouse or a child last night, right? And that's really, and even though like the fight sort of worked its way out and we think we're okay now, it's still going on, right? I'm still bothered by that thing that happened sometime in the past. And I will say for now, it sounds like he's talking about something in the somewhat immediate past, but I'm gonna come back to that in a bit. Oz, right? So there's something that put you, that set you off, that triggered you, and now you're in this mood where you're going to get angry at things. And you don't even remember that there was that trigger initially. Aza Eitza, sheyaschil lechapes bekirbo, be'ezasha ischila kashius orpo zo, o atzvuso v'rogzo ze. So the advice in such a case is that you should begin by investigating internally, doing some internal work, going to therapy. He's not saying that, but that's kind of what he's saying. To think back, at what time did I begin to be in the state of kashius oref, of being a sort of cantankerous individual? Min shazo, uma avar la b'shazo, right? What happened to you at that moment when you started becoming angry? Achal, Right? You remember that you ate something that put you in a cantankerous mood, or maybe you didn't eat, maybe you're getting hangry. And again, he's talking about things that are sort of, I would call, relatively minor and relatively recent, but I'm going to expand this in a moment, because I think the idea here is broader than what he's actually saying. When you look at this inclination and this sort of this touch that's happening to you, right? This sort of direction you're going, asher bikirbo, ha'amakas es machshavosav v'chol rucho, techalesh v'timas. Right? When you start thinking about it, when you realize what it was that actually set you off, that immediately melts. Right? So I was nervous about this lecture, right? 2 days ago. I was nervous about this lecture. I wasn't quite sure how I wanted to structure it, and I felt unprepared. And this was Monday morning, and I was cantankerous Monday night. And I was, you know, my kids were setting me off. And the things they were doing were not that bad. And when I stopped to think about it, I was like, when did I start feeling like this way? And I got back to Monday morning, I was like, I'm not actually mad at my kid for, you know, forgetting to do their homework until after bedtime. Sorry for my kid if they're watching. What I'm actually mad about is that I'm nervous about the lecture on Wednesday night, right? And once I realized that, without doing anything, just realizing that that was actually the thing that was making me snap more quickly than I should have, I actually did feel that melting, right? This, to me, is by far the most sort of productive way, not of managing our anger, not of sort of having a technique that constrains it, but of actually sort of understanding it and helping it sort of become, I think that language of melting is really powerful, right? It melts into our larger psyche. V'simenza yellow. Im be'emes yifka be'asiba asher savavalo es kashius ha'oref o lehevech es ha'atzus ve'aroges, right? And this is actually a sign. If I go back and I remember, I'm like, oh yeah, actually that thing on Monday morning, that was the thing that actually set me off. And when I say that, I actually feel that anger or that activation melt away. That's a sign that I hit on the right thing. Az mamash b'habata rishona asher yistakel ba'techlash, right? That it really will melt away. And if it doesn't, then I have to keep going back. Now, as I said, I think the Piazzesner Rebbe here, on its surface, he's just talking about, I'm hangry, and that's why I'm yelling. Or I ate something that put me in a foul mood. I had too much jalapeno for dinner last night, right? But what he's talking about really, and I suspect, I'm not an expert in the Piazzesner Rebbe at all, and I mean to ask someone who is if they think this is a viable reading, but experientially, I think it certainly is, that this is actually the case for bigger things as well, right? For those of us who have things in our past have led to the kind of personality we have. For some of those are full-blown traumas. For others, they're just moments that maybe are not traumas, but actually are things that contribute to being a trigger so that when something like that sets you off, you know, when you had some experience in grade school that made you extra sensitive to this kind of insult, such that now when someone insults you in that way, even a little bit, you fly off the handle, right? When you actually recognize that, when you do the work, whether on your own or in therapy, to sort of work backwards and get to that point, now, I don't think it's like he describes here when it's a trauma, right? That it melts away immediately. But I do think there's an immediate softening of that, right? That recognition that the reason why I am reacting this way in this moment, that I'm feeling this anger or this stress or this anxiety in this moment is because of something that actually, not what's happening now, but something that actually set me off in my past. When you do that, we begin the process of not just constraining our anger, but actually working through and with our anger. So for me, this is by far the most powerful mode. You know, I think this is often the case that the Piazzesner Rebbe sort of prefigures a lot of like late 20th and 21st century modes of therapy. And I think this is a really good example of that. And I will say personally for me, this is the mode that I find most compelling. That said, I want to take a moment to come back to something that was raised from the question online, which is, okay, so we've got these modes of thinking about how to constrain our anger, how to work with our anger, how to manage our anger, and especially this mode of the Piazzesner that's sort of getting us backwards. But I want to name that with the possible exception of the Alter Rebbe in the Tanya, source number 7, I think it was, with the possible exception of that, and even that, he's talking about my davening and someone's distracting me during it. Even that is a local issue. None of these texts really seem to be talking about the kind of anger that we spoke about in weeks 1 and 2. None of these texts is talking about what we would call righteous anger, anger that is either productive or apt. And I think that's intentional. Because when it comes to the kind of anger I might feel, when someone truly does hurt me in some way, but it's local, it's interpersonal, that kind of anger does, I think, call most of the time for a kind of working through, a kind of management. Whether it's the Pia Zetzner the way it is for me, or if you're more into the Alter Rebbe or the Seventh Lubavitch Rebbe, whichever approaches that works for you, I think it makes sense that that's what we should be doing with those kinds of angers that are primarily local and interpersonal. With regard to the righteous anger, the goal is not to manage or constrain it. The goal is to work with it, right? To actually put it into action and thereby actually make that anger no longer necessary. So what I hope we've seen over the course of these 3 weeks are ways in which it actually is valid and powerful to actually feel your anger. And we should not give in to this tendency that some have to say that anger is always and everywhere a negative. I reject that, and the Rambam, of all people, rejects that. And we should also recognize that most anger we allow ourselves to feel is not actually productive and maybe even is not apt. And thinking about the ways in which we can manage that anger is indeed powerful, and allowing ourselves to feel that righteous anger when it is appropriate is also an essential piece of being a Jew in the world. Well, thank you everyone so much for going on this journey of 3 weeks with me. We are, you know, not done, right? We are all on a path of trying to figure out how and when to deal with our anger. And I definitely feel, thanks to you, that I am closer to where I want to be. I hope you feel the same. You have my email on the source sheet, so happy to be in conversation if anyone wants to take some of these conversations further. Thank you, everyone.